Hello, welcome to the Mind Goal Hour. We had a little technical difficulty, but it's been resolved. So we started just a little bit late. An interesting show today, a different show. I'm really looking forward to it. My guest today will be Michael Jones, author of Logical Universe, A Layman's Reality. And you might ask, what does this have to do with Mind Goal and goal achievement strategies? Well, it occurred to Mike that it might be a good idea if we get a little better grasp of reality and looked past some of the assumptions that we've made and theories we've adopted as true and factual. Now, Michael comes pretty powerfully on as a layman scientist, if you will, and offers some incredible challenges. Here are a few things that he says before I bring Michael on. He says that all popular theories about the universe are incomplete and or illogical. And the two he goes after are the quantum theory and relativity. So they're incomplete, illogical, and paint a picture of the universe that's far from reality. And he's, even though they've contributed great things, they're incomplete. And Mike's going to talk to us about that. He's going to address things. His book starts out with time is only a comparison. Logic is simply a reflection. Empty space is nothing. And he has an energy that he's going to introduce us to, and I'll only say that and let him talk about that. He answers questions like why light travels at the speed it does, what a black hole is, and finally he's going to offer a challenge about the whole issue of gravity. So Michael Jones, welcome to the Mind Goal Hour. And I think Michael is out there somewhere in cyberspace, and maybe experiences the same technical difficulty that I did coming on, or I may not be on.
I can hear you, Jeff.
Okay. Is Michael handy?
Yes, this is Michael.
Oh, Michael, I can barely hear you.
Is this any better?
Slightly, and I don't know whether it's your transmission or my reception, but I will tune an ear to you if you can, as much as you can. Try to speak up like you were speaking to a live audience that spreads out for quite a while.
Okay.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's coming along better. Let's start with a little bit of your background and tell us what brought you to write this book and about the logical universe.
Well, I was born and raised in Washington State. That's where I currently live with my wife and two sons. I absolutely love the universe, and I've been studying it since I was a young boy. My scientific background consists of a lifelong passion for the universe, coupled with personal studies through books, internet, magazines, as well as observations that I make of the universe around me. Now, I wrote Logical Universe because I was unsatisfied with modern science's explanations for gravity, which are little more than descriptions of what happens rather than why it happens.
Mm-hmm. So you were left with the why, and that's your mission?
I want to know the why. Yeah, I'm not happy just to know that it happens.
Okay, yeah.
So in 2001, I sat down with a pen and a paper and attempted to develop a reasonable explanation for why gravity occurs that I could live with.
Mm-hmm.
And because everything's part of the universe and therefore connected, by the time that I had an explanation for gravity that made sense, I also had answers for why inertia occurs, why light travels at the speed that it does, how matter came into existence, and the compelling correlation between the amount of matter in the universe and the speed of light. And I felt the need to share this with others. I felt that there'd be many people that were very interested in these explanations.
Wonderful. Okay. Let's start with what would hold your passion the most that you really, really enjoy speaking about and...
It would be gravity.
Gravity, yes, I thought that might be it. Gravity, we all know gravity is the pull of the Earth on objects, right?
Well, that's what we're all told, exactly. We learned that in school.
Is that true, you think?
I offer an opposing view.
Okay.
I explain that that objects are accelerated toward one another by the fabric of the universe, pushing them toward one another, and that the objects don't reach out through space and pull upon each other.
And what is it that is pushing it, pushing the object?
The fabric of the universe. I show that the fabric of the universe, what Albert Einstein calls space-time, is dynamic. It's not just a passive background that things happen within. But the fabric of the universe is dynamic, and it causes everything to happen. The four forces, the strong and weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and gravity, they're all different aspects of the same single force.
Is it Orico? Is that how you would pronounce it? Is that the force you're speaking of?
Yes.
The word?
Orego.
Pardon?
Orego.
Orego.
It's a Latin word that I use for clarity and ease of use when referring to the fabric of the universe. Orego is the fabric of the universe, which is in motion. Light moves through the universe at about 186,000 miles per second. And gravity acts at the same speed, and that's a little-known fact. That was measured in 2001, I believe.
I'm still having difficulty hearing you, and I'm hoping our audience is hearing you well. You said that light travels at the speed of 186,000 miles a second. Now, that's right from Einstein's theory of relativity, is that not?
Well, that's a speed that's been measured for even long before Einstein came along.
Oh, okay.
But what hasn't been known is the speed that gravity acts at, and that was measured in 2001. Mm-hmm. Gravity acts at the same speed that light travels. This is evidence that Orego, the fabric of the universe, is in motion, in straight lines in every direction. Now, Orego is responsible for everything that exists. And Orego theory will precisely and logically explain all phenomena known and yet to be discovered, I believe, without exception.
Now, Orego could be loosely interpreted as source, is that correct?
Exactly. That'd be the English translation, I believe.
So source, which is pretty popular in mystical circles, and those who, you know, not necessarily uncomfortable with God, but will often say, well, this is an act of God or God's creation, or it's you can come to know your connection to source. You can, and so source is used a lot as a softer word for God, if you will, or the energy in the universe, or the higher intelligence, or the greatest self. But so you're not subscribing necessarily to a Big Bang theory, but you are describing to a first cause.
Exactly, I believe that the universe did indeed spontaneously come into existence. But I don't believe that it came into existence at a single point. I believe that it was infinite in size when it came into existence.
Can you go into that a little bit? Because that's an interesting point.
Well, the reason for that is because before the universe existed, if there was nothing there, then there were also no boundaries and no limiting factors to say, hey, you can only come into existence in this particular point, and therefore it could come into existence everywhere.
So even though we could in a sense go to, if there's a first cause, then there's a subsequent cause, and we could trace back in time to a point where we run out of time, if you will.
Well, yeah, before the universe existed, time didn't exist. In logical universe, I explain that time is nothing more than the measurement and comparison of separate events. For example, one day is simply the period required for the Earth to rotate on its axis one time. Hours,
yeah,
minutes,
that's how we measure. Yeah, okay, follow.
Are all derivatives of that.
I'm losing so much of what you say, it's difficult for me to follow up. If there's a quiet space for a time, speak up while I'm trying to put together the pieces of what I'm only hearing part of it. I'm interested in this time because that's very difficult for the mind to move past. You know, we see events. We know it takes, you know, this show lasts for 55 minutes. It takes 10 minutes for me to get from here to the store. I mean, we are so accustomed to measuring time, and I notice in your book it says that we tend to think of time as something on its own. And you say, well, no, there's no such thing as time on its own. It's only the measurement, and I missed part of what you said, Mikey, that we're comparing, we're saying, you know, this event lasted for so long, But how is that not time still? I'm having trouble with that.
Well, what I say is that time is not some physical substance that can be navigated within. Rather, we just compare periods of separate events. Almost every thing that we consider how long it takes to transpire or happen is compared to the rotation of our planet. And it's as simple as that. It's just a comparison.
So the passing of time is the rotation of the planet?
Well, no, the passing of time, time doesn't actually pass. Events happen.
In the present?
Events happen in the present. We measure the events and we compare the how long they took to happen relative to other events that we have knowledge of. But it's all about the events. It's not, time is not something on its own.
Okay, I noticed in your book you talked about, a lot of the sci-fi things that we'll talk about, time travel and going to the past, or, back to the future, which is such a popular theory, and we have a sense that is so, that something actually exists in the future or exists in the past, but what you're saying is nothing exists except this moment.
Exactly. That's the way I perceive it. Nothing exists except the present.
Mm-hmm.
The past is simply events that occurred, and they're done. I mean, once they happen, they've happened. The future is the reality of the inevitable events that will happen because of what's happening right now in the present. But, of course, they haven't happened yet, and therefore they don't exist.
But, of course, we know that a truck bearing down on us in the road, we need to get out of the way because we know of past events where that has killed people, that has caused harm. And so even though it's happening in that moment, there are similar events that have happened in their moment, would that be a way to say it, that have taught us that information or relative information about events.
Well, exactly, and it's our ability to store that information and recall that and remember what we've learned that allows us to predict the future. One thing I say in the book is that every action that we consciously perform is an exercise in predicting the future.
It's an exercise in what?
In predicting the future.
Predicting the future. Okay, great. For those of you who just tuned in, and I think different people may come onto the internet at different times, Mike, so I kind of like to pop in and remind people or let people know just coming in. Today's guest, we're taking it to Michael Jones. He's the author of Logical Universe, A Layman's Reality. And Mike says the universe is very simple and logical, but science has made it overly complex, and that when we rely on a lot of assumptions that simply are not true. And he offers a very lucid, clear explanation for some things that typically quantum theory, for instance, and theory of relativity, that really, he says, are incomplete. And his book is, again, Logical Universe, A Layman's Reality. And it's published by Inertial Press out of Tacoma, Washington. And I'd like to give you an 800 number and an email that you can contact. Is this direct contact to you, Mike?
Pardon me?
Is Inertial Press
Yes,
in Tacoma.
That will reach me.
Yeah, and the phone number, the 800 number, is 800-531-2900. And if you wish to email and you have some questions after the show or during the show, either call in or just keep track of them and send them in to the show, and I will get back to you, or Michael will get back to you. His email is inertialpress, that's I-N-E-R-T-I-A-L, press, P-R-E-S-S, at Comcast. comcast.net. Mr. Jones, Michael Jones, publicist, Stephanie Mayab, out of Phoenix, and Phoenix publicist, put me in touch with Mike and just sent me some wonderful information about his book, and said, it starts with the question, is everything you know about the universe wrong? And in great part, you'd say that's true. Is that right, Mike?
I say that, yes, there's a lot of misinterpretations that have painted a distorted picture of the universe for us.
Can you talk a little more about this Orgo, or Source? how you came up with that, or
well, I came up with that based upon my observations of how gravity acts, how light moves through the universe, and how inertia acts, and what inertia is. And if you look at equality of the speed at which light travels and the speed at which gravity acts, and if you accept Albert Einstein's interpretation that gravity is due to a change in the fabric of the universe around massive bodies, then it becomes clear that the same thing that causes gravity, the change in the fabric of the universe, is also responsible for the propagation of light, which then means that light is our visual indicator of the motion of the fabric of the universe, or what I call origo. Also, there's other indicators. The equality of inertial mass and gravitational mass link, of course, gravity with inertia, and also henceforth then with light, which shows us, again, that further evidence that the fabric of the universe is dynamic. And so it's those observations that really made it clear to me that the fabric of the universe is dynamic.
And when you say dynamic, I noticed that you several times you mentioned that that even though empty space is nothing, you really, that's almost a twist on words, and that when you say that empty space really is dynamic.
Well, when I say that empty space is nothing, that's, I believe, in chapter one, what I'm referring to is the empty space that existed before origo, or the fabric of the universe, came into existence. That was indeed empty. The space that we are familiar with, that we typically think about as empty space, and it's typically referred to as empty space, is much different. That is not empty space. In fact, there has never been an observation or experiment that supports the idea of empty space. Everywhere we look, we will find both gravitational fields and electromagnetic energy, light and radio waves.
And so that's partially at least what you mean when you say it's dynamic, that it's
always in motion.
That would be what you mean by. Now, when you had speed of light traveling at 186,000 miles per second, what keeps that consistent? Why wouldn't, we typically think of propulsion that starts something out at a certain velocity, but then, the forces of gravity will slow it down, I'm purposely not muddying the water, but I'm purposely stating it that way because I know you have a very different view. Why does the speed of light stay consistent?
Well, the speed of light actually does not stay consistent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But the thing driving it, the fabric of the universe, is something that I call infinite motion. When it came into existence, infinite motion is such velocity that it would cross an infinite distance instantly. Conditions at the beginning of the universe, with the fabric of the universe opposing itself in opposite directions at every point in the universe, didn't allow that to happen. And so part of it changed to a stationary state, which is what we know as matter now. So it's in motion. It has an infinite amount of energy, though. It won't run out of energy. But the speed of light does indeed change, as we can see, when the density of any region of the universe is changed. For example, light moving from space to our atmosphere slows down as it moves through the denser air. And of course,
denser air, you're saying? Through different densities?
Yes.
Okay.
And actually, one of the most interesting aspects of it is that it will also accelerate when it transfers from a less dense medium from a dense medium to a less dense medium. It will accelerate, which shows us that it's indeed experiencing a constant acceleration. light, we know that light slows down when it travels through denser media.
Give me an example of that, would you, Mike?
Pardon me?
Give me an example of when light would slow down when you're saying denser media or medium.
Light traveling through the air, for example, is traveling at a certain speed. When it enters a piece of glass, it will slow down.
Okay.
And travel at a slower speed. So what that does is it indicates that light is experiencing resistance to its motion. Now, for something to travel at a constant speed while experiencing resistance to its motion, it must be experiencing a constant acceleration. So light is being constantly accelerated through the universe. Its speed remains constant due to, whatever the local factors are that limit the speed of the fabric of the universe.
Would you talk a little bit, because you've used that term a few times now, Mike, the fabric of the universe?
The fabric of the universe is the origo. What it is it's pure energy. It travels in straight lines in every direction at all points in the universe. So if you could see it with your eyes, it would appear to converge at every point in the universe. It would also appear to move radially outward at every point in the universe. And we can see it with light. We take a light source and we heat the filament of a light bulb up. And we see the fabric of the universe carry the light energy radially outward away from the source. We see it with gravitational fields. We see it moving radially inward toward all matter.
So, light is a form of energy. It moves at different speed. And you're saying that the fabric of the universe is source itself. So in the spiritual context, when they say, you know, that God or source is omnipresent, is everywhere, is everything, does that fit with your view?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, in fact.
It would seem to do that.
I
read your book. I went through it, in all honesty, rather quickly. Do you address anywhere in there about, you know, matter coming into existence? We have first cause and then, and I know you do somewhat, and I'm really kind of moving toward the human being's appearance. And do you have any thoughts on that, or of how matter formed and then how human beings formed, if you will?
Well, I do talk about how matter came into existence.
Okay.
And matter came into existence because the fabric of the universe could not, being infinite motion and moving in every direction, could not move because it was opposing itself in every direction. Part of it changed to a stationary state.
Okay.
At that point, is the matter. But it wasn't matter as we know it. Atoms and molecules didn't exist yet.
All right.
But the pressure generated by the fabric of the universe is exactly equal to the pressure required to maintain the compression of the matter that exists in the universe. That's the reason for the stability of our universe. That's why matter doesn't pop in and out of existence.
Okay, that's what it holds together.
Exactly. Right. But as far as how human beings came into existence, that's not something that I address. I'm more into the gravity and how the universe works rather than some of the more specifics of life. But one thing I would like to point out on that note, because I see that some of your interest is in the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
I sincerely believe this, that I'm not separate from the universe. I'm exist because of the universe. I am in the universe, as is everything else and everyone else, and therefore I am the universe. I'm the every one of us who considers the workings of the universe is the universe considering itself.
Both as part of source and as a distinct human being, if you will.
Exactly. We're and I haven't really tried to define it, but we're like the universe itself, experiencing and seeing itself from a multitude of various vantage points and perspectives.
All right. Now, what brought this, pardon the term, what brought this to light for you? I know it was your curiosity, but were there moments in your life, were there times where you did little ahas that it just became clear to you that said, wait a minute, they've talked about this, but not the why it happens. I mean, how did your view materialize?
When I was about 11 or 12 years old, my great-aunt Dorothy gave me and my brother Earl a set of science encyclopedias. They were Popular Science, copyright 1963. I still have them. I don't read them very often. But they were prime entertainment for me. I couldn't get my nose out of them. But some information they didn't have was why gravity occurred. And of course, I thought that scientists understood the universe at that point in my life because of the way it's presented in school. And so I went to the library. I thought it was just a matter of finding the right book and reading the words, and I'd know why gravity occurred. Well, I left the library that day realizing that scientists don't understand the universe. They don't know why gravity occurs, and they still don't.
No.
I think at that point, that was one of the turning points for me.
At 11, you said, wait a minute, there are no good answers out there.
Exactly.
Well, it's kept your fascination for some time. Ken, Mike, can you talk a little bit about the controlled field propulsion? Because what keeps coming back to me is, you put it in great layman's terms, and reading it through, it nothing bounces off the mind as saying, no, how could that be? When you talk about there being an outside force and an inside force or that force that compacts matter, where I find myself going back and questioning and just asking for explanation about is that you said it moves in a straight line.
The fabric of the universe tends to move in straight lines.
Now, what would open up that straight line if there's equal force all around?
Well, it would tend to move in straight lines because that's the path of least resistance. If it was to deviate at any point, it would experience greater resistance. However, there are no straight lines in our universe. As long as one gravitational field exists, a straight line can't exist. So when I say it tends to move in straight lines, it's not actually a straight line as the abstract geometrical straight line that we imagine.
So would this be totally? Is it moving in a straight line in every direction?
In every direction.
Can you tell a little bit about the controlled field propulsion? Because even though you say source is dynamic, that's the end. That's origo. That's what moves the universe. That's why it moves in a straight line in every direction, and that there are discrete parts of it where that propulsion or that motion stopped to the point where matter formed, and that's fine. Tell me about controlled field propulsion. I know that's an area that you're developing.
Yeah, controlled field propulsion is, you get that through what I call artificial gravitational fields, which you find in Chapter 3, which is one of my favorite chapters to read. Mm-hmm. But the reason that gravity occurs is the fabric of the universe is moving toward the Earth, say, and this is the same for all matter, but it's moving toward the Earth from one direction. It moves through the Earth, acting upon the Earth, holding the atoms that the Earth consists of together, and then it goes out the other side. Now, something on the other side where it comes out experiences the inward force acting upon it, say me, experiencing the fabric of the universe acting upon me in the direction or from the direction of the Earth. Now, I also have the inward force or origo acting upon me from the direction of space, which hasn't experienced or which hasn't lost any energy holding the planet together. And so it's stronger from the direction of space than it is from the direction of Earth. And so there's a directional energy imbalance that accelerates me toward the planet. Now, an artificial gravitational field is one that would be developed or generated through electrical and mechanical means rather than a massive body. And I believe that if the universe is indeed dynamic, then that may very well be possible. And that would just be a matter of manipulating, understanding, and being able to manipulate the field so that you could divert some of the fabric of the universe acting upon the craft, around the craft, so that it acts upon it from the opposite side. If you can do that, you would be able to move the object in any direction you want. For example, if you drop a rock right now, it goes straight to the ground. Now, if you could manipulate the fabric of the universe acting upon the rock, you could make it go sideways or up or down or any way you want it to.
What would be the means of that manipulation? What's coming to you in terms of that? It sounds neat. It sounds very futuristic, and it would certainly be a whole new approach to rocket science, for instance. What
would be the need?
What are the means of that manipulation?
What are the means? Well, you know, that's the trillion-dollar question.
Okay.
That I don't have the answer to. That's something that's going to take a lot of hard work, much like the Wright brothers applied to their heavy.
But your sense is that it is possible for us to develop some artificial means of controlling that source, if you will, or using source to move objects.
Exactly, and you know, I'm not the first to ever think this up. Of course, we see it in science fiction and all over the place. In fact, NASA was working on this in 2000, trying to develop what they called gravity shielding. They still think they're blocking the Earth from pulling on the object,
right,
rather than manipulating the fabric of the universe around the object.
And that brings me to a question. That I'd like you to, or a topic that you mentioned. I asked what held you most interested, and you said gravity. You have issued a challenge.
Oh yes.
About gravity, and so let us listeners tune into this challenge. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's the Logical Universe Gravitational Challenge, and I offer it because, of course, I'm presenting an opposing view to what's commonly told to the general public, and that is that objects are pulling on one another. And my challenge is that I'm offering $15,000 to the first person to prove that gravity is due to objects pulling upon one another.
You know, usually when we think of objects pulling on one another, we're thinking of the gravitational pull of the Earth pulling on something.
Yeah, the Earth pulling on the Moon or the Moon pulling on the oceans.
Yeah.
And I'm saying there's, you know, for 300 years, over 300 years, we've been told that objects pull upon one another.
Right.
And there's never been an observation or an experiment that supports that idea. I think it's time for scientists and our teachers and authors who are writing this stuff to either provide the evidence or tell people what it really is, or that we don't know what it is. Hey, gravity is acceleration, but we don't know why.
So if Newton was still alive, you'd say, tell me about that apple, and he'd say, well, watch, when I let go of it, it falls to the Earth.
Yeah,
you're saying that doesn't explain or convince me that there's something pulling on that apple.
Exactly. You could look at it and say, well, is it being pulled or is it being pushed? And there's, you know, there's not an experiment or a measurement that we can take that will indicate either way. So why is it that our children are taught that it's a pull? It makes no sense. And what it does is it blocks, or rather cuts off, a lot of critical thought that could go into the problem of gravity by leading a majority of the population to believe that it's already understood.
Right. And so how would one respond to your gravitational challenge if they said, wait a minute, I think I've got a view of this, that they would contact you?
They can get on my website, logicaluniverse.com.
Logicaluniverse.com?
Yes.
Okay.
And find the complete rules there, and it'll tell them what to do.
One of the call-out quotes on your book jacket says, not an elegant universe or a universe in a nutshell. Ours is a universe that makes sense, a logical universe.
I believe that
can you give us a nutshell of that? When you say the universe makes sense, a logical universe, tell me what you're saying when you say that.
I'm saying that it's simple. Every one of us can understand it. high school kids should know why gravity occurs, why light travels through the universe, why it moves at the speed that it does. And when we look at it in a distorted manner that we do through the eyes of quantum physics, which is the prevailing theory of the day, it leads to such a distorted picture that no one can hope to ever understand it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's exactly opposite of that. I believe that it's very simple, and we're turning a simple thing into something that's more complex than it needs to be.
Well, I think that's and I don't mean this in a literal sense, but just more in vernacular language, that there are many fields in which there's a priesthood established, and it's presented as incredibly complex. Certainly the computer field is one of those, as Doug and Don will attest to, having some technical difficulties today and getting the show up on cyberspace. So your bumper sticker says question science. I mean, the Us Old Hippies had one that said question authority, and yours says question science.
Yeah, question what we're told. Find out for yourself.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I appreciate you being on the show. This is a great, great food for thought, and I want to just again repeat this. Michael Jones, a lifelong student of the universe, and he's got a great imagination and a passion for what he's studied for years and years, and at 11, left the library convinced that we didn't have all the answers and decided to look into it thoroughly for himself, and in 2001 began to put together a book that is now on the bookshelves, if you will. Is this available on Amazon.com, do you know?
Yes, it's available. You can get it just about anywhere.
Okay, and the title is Logical Universe, A Layman's Reality, and the author's name is Michael Jones. Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show. I enjoyed talking to you, and I'm going to read your book a little more thoroughly, and then I'm going to email you some questions, and I'm going to work on that gravitational challenge.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, Mike. Thanks so much for coming on. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks so much for your patience, and it was difficult for me to hear you, and hopefully it broadcast well, went out through the... cyberspace well, and I think so. I think it just probably we just hooked up separately to it. So enjoy the day. Thanks so much for participating.
Hey, the book is also available on my website as well at logicaluniverse.com.
Repeat that website name again, please.
Logicaluniverse.com.
Logicaluniverse.com. Check it out, and let's see if we can move you up on the bestseller list.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mike.
Bye.
All right. Well, thanks very much. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did not have difficulty, as much difficulty hearing as I did. And I just want to wrap up. You might say, what did this have to do with the Mind Goal Hour, with goal achievement and goal achievement strategies? Well, when we question authority, as Us Old Hippies did, when we question science, when we don't just accept everything that comes to us because someone else said it, and we become just a parrot of that word, we begin to claim our own individuality, and our own sense of self strengthens. And in pi, usually I start the show by offering everyone pi, and that is the practical side of the goal achievement strategies that I teach. And it addresses eight areas of life. These are the eight pieces of pi. And in one of the eight pieces of the pie are health and fitness, relationships, career, sense of self, and that's what I'm going to return to, mission, our mission in life, legacy we want to leave, our community spirit, whether that's our team spirit, our work spirit, our family spirit, our neighborhood spirit, but just a sense of being with others, and where I live, where you live. What I do is ask you to look at those eight areas of life and assess, to take a look and say, where am I right now? Where am I in my health and fitness, my relationship, my career? What's my sense of self? What is my mission? Do I know my purpose here in life? Am I asking about that? Am I moving in that direction? What legacy do I want to leave? What is my community spirit? How happy am I about where I live right now? I ask you to look at that and then establish a goal. If you're perfectly content and happy with it, you're fine. You know, teachers such as myself and others who I'm a business and personal coach, who offer their views and their assistance, really, really come along to help us identify ourselves and to improve our sense of self, our sense of integrity, and I mean that in a sense of certainly how we relate to others in the world, but our own holistic integrity, our sense of self. What we can do with Mind Goal goal achievement strategies, we can look at the practical side of life, but I balance it with what I suggest we do, which is do the serious inner work. Because when you question authority, you question science, you question where you are right now in the world. Now, if you're perfectly happy and content, there's no need to question. Just enjoy and if you will, thank God for every breath and just be grateful and enjoy that. If, however, you are not perfectly content, there are answers. And questioning is certainly the beginning. I mean, who am I is certainly the big question in the non-dual community, that by continually, deeply inquiring, who am I, who am I, who am I, that you will move into a place of discovery, and the sense of self will move from a small S, if you will, to a big S. And what you will find, that who you are is definitely connected. As Michael Jones, our guest today, who wrote Logical Universe, is that we are source, origo, as he terms it, the dynamic energy that moves the universe, if you will, that moves everything, that it is everything, it is everywhere, and we are it. You know, one of my favorite teachers, Jesus, said, if you've seen the Father, you've seen me. So in a sense, if you've seen me, you've seen source. And we can come to know that in ourselves, and goal achievement strategies that balance, and our life strategies, our living existence, that balances the practical look at who we are and where we are in this life with the critical first step of inner work to question who am I, to go deeply inside, to listen for what I call the wisdom whisper, to go inside and spend quiet time, to listen to that still small voice inside, will give us, excuse me, will improve our intuition, our intuitive grasp of who we are in this world. And I'm sure Michael Jones has gone through some of that as he created Logical Universe, that it just begins to form within us, and sometimes it more than just begins, it comes as a lightning bolt. It says, who I am in this universe is part of everything. And we move from what I call a secondary identity, where we feel connected to events, and we are emotionally manipulated by events, if you will, and by other people, to a place of primary identity, where we discover our center, ourselves, our source, and who we are, where we're no longer affected by events in the same way, that we are not attached to outcome, and yet at the same time we're totally free, we become very active, very productive. And what comes with this is, at the core of my teaching, that we discover that from the heart, from this wisdom whisper, we come back, if you will, to a new appreciation, to that sense of being in a benevolent universe that a child has. As Jesus said, only as a child you enter the kingdom of heaven. That we can return to that childlike joy, and there are so many side benefits that come with this. I offer a meditation technique that I'm going to recap in the next 2 minutes that can bring you more and more in touch with source. And what it will do is you may establish your goals on the practical pie that I mentioned, but then go inside and begin to draw on that source, begin to discover the source that was within you. And as that sense of self grows and manifests, if you will, presents itself to you, there will be a sudden rush of wisdom. There will be a wisdom whisper that comes from your heart, and I'll go into it more deeply in another show that's devoted to that. And you will come back to your goals, and you'll refine them. And sometimes you'll turn them completely upside down, and the world will begin to look different to you, and you will feel much more confident about your ability to achieve these goals. Often it is a lack of that sense of self, or that self-awareness, or self-realization, that has us underestimate what we can do and who we are in this world. There is a freedom. There is a truth that sets you free, and it's freedom from fear, freedom from the concern with what other people think, and it just, life begins to take on a whole new glow and a whole new light. So thank you for tuning in to the Mind Goal Hour. The meditation I mentioned, it's called the Mystic Heart Meditation, and it's about listening to our heart to discover that mystic wisdom inside. And I use a little mantra with it called Q-Baha, and the Q is the letter Q, also in paren, it's Q-C-U-E, because it's a cue to ourselves to begin our meditation. We can, in moments that we feel some distress or some discomfort in the world, we can go to Q-Baha. We can use that as a cue to go to what I call quiet awareness. And that is incredibly simple. You know, Mike Jones in his Logical Universe talked about how simple the universe is. The more simple we can make things, the more benefit we often can derive from them. By simply being quietly aware of where we are right at this moment, stop at this moment and realize you're listening to an internet radio show called The Mind Goal Hour on BBS Radio, definitely not mainstream, and that's where you are. That event is happening right now, and that's the only thing happening, and right now is the only thing. And you can come to grasp that in terms that release an incredible appreciation and gratitude for life that will have you fall in love with everyone you know all over again, will allow you to experience a personal forgiveness for who you are. And I've moved to the fruit of this very, very quickly without going through it. But something as simple as a few times a day, when it occurs to you, to simply be quietly aware for a few seconds. So that's the cue in the cue Baha, quiet awareness. To maintain that, to stay a little longer in that place, because as soon as we start that quiet awareness, the mind begins to chatter. Go to breath awareness. Overlay that quiet awareness by noticing when you're inhaling, when you're exhaling. So right now, just as you just kind of go quietly aware, just come into the very present moment and pick up on your breathing. Notice when you're inhaling, notice when you're exhaling. And that's the Ba in the cue Baha. Now the cue Baha, cue apostrophe, if you will, B-A-H-A. The H-A is heart awareness. Once you've spent some time doing the quiet awareness practice, if you will, and the breath awareness, begin to listen for the heart. Listen for the wisdom whisper. When you can go to a beautifully quiet, meditative, silent place, the heart will whisper wisdom to you, not in words, but in new understanding. And it brings with it an incredible joy, and it's been my joy to be with you on this Mind Goal Hour. Thanks for tuning in, for laptoping in or computering in, and I am on every Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to 2 p.m. where the station is, Pacific Time, and I'll see you next time.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.